Welcome back to the Deep Dive, everybody. Today, we're diving into a pretty complex topic. Multi-scale modeling.
Yeah.
It's kind of like trying to understand, let's say, a hurricane, right?
Okay.
You could look at the swirling clouds from a satellite, but to really predict its path and get its power, you also have to understand, like, those tiny little air currents and pressure systems.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what multi-scale modeling is all about. Mm-hmm. It's about using all these different lenses, right?
Right.
To try and understand this complex system at different levels of detail. And this is important for, well, tackling a lot of different things, like biological systems and even designing materials.
Yeah, and especially biological systems are so hierarchical, right? You have from the quantum mechanics, you know, of the atom and then the molecules and the cells and the tissues and the organs. And to really understand how life works, you have to connect those dots between all those different levels.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what multi-scale modeling tries to do. And this is helpful for all kinds of applications in biology, from enzymes, how they work, to ecosystems.
It's really amazing. It's like, you know, if you're trying to appreciate a painting.
Yeah.
And you only look at one brushstroke, you'd miss the big picture, right?
Totally.
And this isn't just limited to biology.
Right.
I mean, chemical engineers use this a lot to design catalysts or to optimize industrial processes. Mm-hmm. So it really is this powerful tool, this interdisciplinary approach that is really fascinating.
Yeah. And a lot of the most important processes in biology hinge on these complex interactions, like, you know, between proteins, lipids, nucleic acids. These interactions drive, you know, everything from how our cells communicate to how genes are processed. And modeling these is a huge challenge because it occurs at such a huge range of scales.
You're
we're talking about events that occur at, you know, fractions of a nanometer, you know, in femtoseconds, all the way to micrometer-sized structures changing over seconds or even longer.
Okay.
Okay.
So let's unpack that a little bit.
Sure.
You're saying that these traditional computer simulations.
Right.
Really have a hard time capturing those tiny little interactions and these slow changes simultaneously. It's kind of like, you know, trying to photograph a bullet train and a snail with the same camera settings.
Right, exactly.
You'd probably miss one or the other.
Poorly.
But this is where machine learning comes in.
Yeah, exactly.
This
is
where things get really, really interesting.
That's right. So that leads us to what we're talking about today, this new infrastructure called MUMMI. Multi-scale machine-learned modeling infrastructure.
Okay.
And our mission, really, in this deep dive is to explore how MUMMI is tackling these challenges, specifically how proteins interact with the membranes of cells, using the Rostoff pathway as a key example.
Okay.
And this pathway, of course, is really important because it regulates cell growth. And when things go wrong with it due to mutations or other things, it can lead to cancer.
Right, so let's start with the challenges then of bridging these incredible scales, these time scales, these size scales.
Right.
You mentioned molecular dynamic simulations, and these are crucial, but they have limitations.
They do. Molecular dynamic simulations are really amazing. They allow us to see these movements of atoms and molecules. But the problem is to accurately represent the forces and interactions across those spatial scales and across those time scales from femtoseconds to seconds is computationally a huge, huge challenge.
Yeah. I mean, it's like trying to map every single ant in a colony.
Yeah.
But also track how the whole colony is moving all at the same time.
That's a great analogy. Yeah.
It's kind of mind boggling.
It is. And many important processes, like when proteins assemble or the rearrangements of membranes, involve these huge structures that span, you know, many orders of magnitude. And traditional MD simulations struggle to capture both the rapid little vibrations and the slower movements.
At the same time.
And then it just becomes computationally way too expensive.
So you're forced to choose.
Exactly.
Between this incredible level of detail and this broader perspective.
Yeah, that's right. And what's missing is a truly integrated framework that can handle these different levels at the same time.
Okay.
Right? So you can have an atomistic simulation that tells you how two molecules bind, but it won't tell you how often that happens in a cell, which is what you need for those larger scale models.
Right. And then there's this time scale difference.
Huge. Yeah.
I mean, the vibrations in a molecule happen so fast compared to a membrane changing shape.
Exactly.
So it's not just running simulations at different scales separately.
Right.
You have to somehow transfer that information from one level to another.
Yes.
So it's like translating an engineering blueprint into a simple sketch.
Yeah.
But you can't lose that structural information.
Exactly. That's right. And even within methods that simplify, like coarse graining methods, bridging different timescales, is still a big, big problem. So to create a truly robust workflow, we need to not just overcome the computational limitations, but also figure out how to transfer this information, integrate it.
Okay, so these are some pretty big hurdles, but you mentioned machine learning could help.
Yes.
How so?
Yeah, so this is where machine learning really comes in and helps us bridge those gaps. And, you know, machine learning is great at learning complex patterns from data. Mm. So it can really help connect different scales in this multi-scale framework.
Okay, so how does that work?
Yeah, so think of it as like feedback loops between these different levels, okay?
Cool.
So machine learning can help with something called forward coupling.
Yeah.
This is where you use information from a larger scale to improve things at the smaller scale.
Okay.
So for example, imagine a model that shows specific regions of the cell membrane changing a lot. That information can then be used to focus a smaller, more detailed simulation on that exact region.
Which is like the bigger simulation's guiding the smaller one.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then you have backward coupling, where the detailed simulations give feedback to improve the larger scale model.
Okay.
So for example, a detailed simulation might reveal some very specific atomic interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Then machine learning can use that to adjust the parameters of the larger model.
Okay.
So it becomes more accurate. So you have this back and forth, and things get more accurate.
So it's this iterative process.
Exactly, exactly.
Can you give me some concrete examples of how ML's being used?
Yeah, sure. So one example is in these QMMM methods, where you combine quantum mechanics with molecular mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
Machine learning can be used to handle these very complex interactions and reduce the computational cost.
Okay.
Another example is in material science,
right,
where you can train machine learning on simulations to predict how a material might fail or classify defects. And then you can use that in these larger continuum models to go from, you know, very small to very large.
Okay, so really connecting those scales.
Exactly. And then you also have things like ML potentials.
Okay.
These are ways to predict energy and forces between atoms with almost the accuracy of quantum mechanics, but much, much faster.
Wow.
And then ML is also used to go from these simplified representations back to the full atomic detail, like enhancing a blurry picture.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah. So, and it's not just simulations. It's also, you know, integrating it with experiments, with biophysical methods.
Mm-hmm.
So ML is helping us overcome those computational limitations, making things faster, focusing on the important parts.
Mm-hmm.
And these deep learning advancements are really making this accessible to more researchers.
That's really exciting. So where does MumEye fit into this?
Yeah, so MumEye is a platform designed specifically to leverage machine learning for multi-scale modeling. And it focuses on those intricate biomolecular systems. And it does this by really tightly coupling the different scales using machine learning.
Okay, so what makes MumEye stand out?
Yeah. So one key thing is its ability to create these huge ensembles of micro simulations.
Really?
We're talking tens of thousands, even, all guided by machine learning.
Wow.
It also uses this thing called a machine learned latent space, which is a way to simplify complex data.
Okay.
So it's like taking all this complex information and boiling it down to its essence.
Okay.
And that allows us to see patterns and connections we couldn't see otherwise. And it focuses initially on these interactions between RAS-RAF proteins and the cell membrane.
Okay.
And as we said, this pathway is crucial for cell growth. And when it goes wrong, it can cause cancer.
Right. Right.
So MumEye is trying to understand how these proteins interact with the membrane at a molecular level. And it can identify these lipid protein fingerprints, which are these patterns of lipid molecules that can affect how these proteins work.
Interesting. Okay, so tell me more about this three-scale architecture that MumEye uses.
Yeah, so MumEye has these three levels to bridge these gaps in space and time. The first level is the macro scale.
Okay.
And it uses something called dynamic density functional theory, or DDFT.
Okay.
And this allows us to simulate milliseconds of time over a fairly large area, like one square micrometer of the membrane.
So it's the broad view, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. It doesn't show every atom, but it can capture the general movement of the membrane and how proteins like RAS and RAF generally prefer to sit on the membrane.
Okay, so that's the big picture.
Right.
And then we zoom in.
Right. So then you have the coarse grained, or CG, scale.
Okay.
And this uses the Martini bead model. And in this model, groups of atoms are represented as single beads, so we can simulate larger systems for longer. And this level focuses on smaller patches of the membrane, maybe 30 by 30 nanometers, areas that the macro scale has identified as interesting.
Okay, so the action spots.
Exactly, yeah. And these patches often have proteins like RAS or the RAS-RB-DCRD complex, which is part of RAF. And we use the Martini force field, which are the rules for how these beads interact. And we can run these on GPUs, and we can get, about a microsecond per day on a single GPU. And this gives us a good view of how proteins change their shape and interact with each other.
Okay, so we've got the big picture, we've got some more local details.
Right.
What about the really, really fine details?
Right, so then you go to the all atom or AA level, and now we're back to every single atom being represented. We use the CHAR-M M36 force field, which is very detailed. And this allows us to see those very specific interactions between lipids and the amino acids in the protein and how those lipids might affect the protein structure.
But this must be very computationally expensive.
It is. It is. So we take snapshots from the CG simulations, and we convert them back to all atom, a process called back mapping. And then we use energy minimization to kind of relax the structure. And we run these simulations using things like AMBER or GROMax. And these are much slower. We're talking maybe 14 nanoseconds per day on a GPU, but it gives us that really crucial atomic detail that we can't get otherwise.
And so these transitions between scales, are there tools that help you with that?
Yes. MUM-MI has tools to help move between these different levels. For example, there's a tool called CreateSims that converts the macro scale to the coarse grain scale.
That's
And
right.
then for going from CG to AA, there's a back mapping protocol to make sure we get an accurate atomic structure. So all these tools help us move between these different levels consistently.
Okay, so we've got these three scales, each with their own methods. How does machine learning tie into all of this?
So machine learning is not just an add-on here.
Okay.
It's really essential to MUM-MI's ability to connect these scales to manage all this data.
Okay.
And it does this by coupling these scales, both macro to CG and also sort of indirectly CG to AA through choosing those starting configurations.
Okay.
So it's really the glue that holds everything together.
So let's talk about that coupling in more detail. How does ML do this forward and backward flow?
So in the forward direction, the ML models are trained on the macro scale data, and they're trained to pick out the interesting parts, the parts we want to look at in more detail. So let's say a protein starts to cluster, or it really likes a specific lipid, or the membrane changes shape in a specific way. The ML model will flag that, and MUM-MI will then say, okay, let's look at that region with the CG model.
So it's like a smart filter.
Like a scout that says, okay, look here, this is where the action is. And then in the backward direction, machine learning helps refine those larger models based on what we learn from the smaller simulations. So as the CG simulations run, we analyze in real time how those proteins and lipids are interacting. And that information can then be used to adjust the macro model, make it more accurate. Similarly, the information from the all-atom simulations can be used to improve the CG model.
So it's this constant learning and refining.
Exactly, exactly.
It's fascinating.
And beyond that, machine learning also helps with how MUM-MI manages all these simulations, how it decides which simulations to run. It uses something called dynamic importance sampling.
Okay, so what does that mean? What makes a simulation important?
So it really depends on what the scientist is looking for, right? So maybe it's a protein binding to a specific lipid, or proteins clustering together, or maybe it's the membrane changing shape.
The machine learning model will look at all these configurations from the macro scale and say, okay, this one's interesting, this one's not so interesting. And then MoMA-I uses that to decide which regions to simulate in more detail.
So it's like a priority system.
And this is really important because it helps us use those computational resources efficiently. So we're not wasting time on things that aren't important.
So this must require huge amounts of computing power.
It does. It does. High resolution, long time scale models need a lot of power. And MUM-MI is designed to run on all kinds of high performance computing systems, from smaller clusters to supercomputers. It's been run on systems like Sierra at Lawrence Livermore, which has hundreds of thousands of CPU cores and thousands of GPUs.
Wow, it's hard to even imagine that much power. How do you manage that?
Yeah, so MamaMai is designed to use both CPUs and GPUs.
Okay.
The macro scale model with those equations on a grid, it's really good for CPUs.
And we can get almost a millisecond per day with thousands of cores.
Wow, that's fast.
And then the CG and AA simulations with all those particles, they're better for GPUs.
Okay.
So CG can get a microsecond per day on one GPU.
Okay.
AA, about 14 nanoseconds per day.
Okay.
So by using both, we can handle all those different scales.
Right. And with thousands of simulations running, how do you keep track of everything?
Yeah. So we have the workflow manager, or WM.
Okay.
And this is like the control center. It monitors resources, it starts jobs, it tracks progress, it restarts things that fail.
Okay.
And it uses these tools like Flux or Maestro to handle all the communication.
So it's like the conductor of the orchestra.
Exactly, yeah.
And all these simulations must generate a ton of data.
Oh, they do. Hundreds of terabytes, sometimes even petabytes.
How do you manage that?
So we need special storage solutions, special analysis tools, and a lot of this data is made public through servers in a repository so other researchers can use it.
That's great.
Yeah.
So how has MamaMai actually been used to study this RAS-RAF system?
Yeah, so studying RAS-RAF has really been a key focus for MamaMai.
Okay.
This pathway is so important for cell growth, and when it goes wrong, it causes cancer.
Right.
So we really need to understand how these proteins work and how they interact with the membrane.
Okay.
And MamaMai is perfect for this because it can handle those atomic details and those long time scales.
Okay, so what have you learned?
Well, one of the biggest things is that we've been able to identify those lipid protein fingerprints.
Mm-hmm.
These are those patterns of lipids that surround the protein, and they can affect how it's oriented, how it binds to other molecules.
Okay.
So by simulating both RAS on its own and the RAS-RAF complex on the membrane, we've learned a lot about how they interact with the lipids.
Okay. Can you give me some more specific examples?
Sure. So for example, we've looked at how a specific region of RAF, the cysteine rich domain, or CRD, moves when it binds to RAS.
Okay.
This is important for understanding how RAF gets activated.
Okay.
We've also looked at how the orientation of the RAS-RAF complex affects how it interacts with lipids.
Mm.
And we've even looked at specific RAS variants like KRS4B, which is known to be really difficult to target with drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been able to simulate all this on realistic membranes.
Wow.
So it's really relevant to what's happening in a cell.
Okay, so really connecting those details to the bigger picture.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And that's the power of this multi-scale approach, to get that full picture.
So what are some of the key findings from all this?
Yeah, so one surprising thing is that RAS proteins are not just sitting there passively on the membrane.
Okay.
They can actually change the lipids around them.
Interesting. So they're shaping their environment.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm. And we've also seen that RAS proteins like to cluster together. Mm. And the way they cluster is influenced by those lipid fingerprints.
Right.
So the lipids might be controlling how RAS signals.
So the membrane's not just a backdrop. It's an active participant.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've also seen how RAS changes its orientation when it binds to RAF,
mm-hmm.
which then affects how it interacts with lipids.
Okay.
And it turns out that RAS has different lipid fingerprints depending on whether it's bound to RAF or not.
So it's like the lipids are telling us what state RAS is in.
Yeah, exactly. And we've also learned a lot about how the RAS-RAF complex forms and how it moves.
Okay.
The continuum model, when we use data from the CG simulations to refine it, it can actually accurately show how RAF binds and unbinds to RAS.
Okay.
And the all-atom simulations have shown us very specific lipid-dependent changes in the complex, which we can then use to improve the CG model.
Okay.
So again, that back and forth. And the CG simulations have even hinted that you can get these larger clusters of RAS and RAF.
Really?
So it's really a complex and dynamic picture.
And this all gives us a much more accurate understanding of these interactions.
Yes, absolutely. And by using both the continuum and CG models together, we can actually make the simulations run faster.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So the CG simulations reach equilibrium faster.
Okay. So it's more efficient.
More efficient. Yeah. So all of this, I think, shows how powerful MamaMai is and how it can be used to generate these hypotheses that we can then test in the lab.
This has been a fascinating deep dive. So What's the key takeaway?
Well, I think the key takeaway is that Mumminai is a major step forward in computational biology.
Okay.
Its design and how it uses machine learning lets us study these complex systems across these huge ranges of time and size.
And what it's told us about Rosroff is really exciting, right?
It is. It's giving us this really detailed understanding of how these proteins work, which is important for understanding cancer and potentially for developing new drugs.
So looking ahead, what's next for Mumminai?
Well, I think we can expand it to study all kinds of other systems, other proteins, other signaling pathways.
Mm-hmm.
We can use even more advanced machine learning like deep learning or reinforcement learning. And I think this could really change how we develop drugs, especially for targets like Rosroff that are so difficult.
It sounds like these machine learning driven simulations are going to be essential tools going forward.
Oh, I think so, yeah. I think with the way computing power is increasing and how these methods are getting better, this is going to be the standard way to study complex molecular systems.
And maybe we'll even see fully automated simulations in the future.
Oh, I think that's very likely.
So thinking about all this complex dance of proteins and their environment,
yeah,
makes you wonder, how will this change how we treat diseases? Maybe we'll go beyond targeting just the proteins themselves and start thinking about the whole context.
Right.
It's really fascinating. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been a great deep dive.
My pleasure.
And for everyone listening, keep thinking about these questions. And we'll see you next time.